Improvise.
Musical.
Comedy.
What are the words?
Making up as you go along.
Do you know what you're talking about?
Rhyming.
Choruses.
Verses.
Bridges.
It's words. It's music.
Sing it. It's musical, sometimes.
Hello and welcome to our latest musical improv comedy podcast. This is a special on
location.
So
we're sitting backstage at the Greenwich Theatre at the moment. We are joined by Dylan Emery of Showstoppers. Hello, Dylan.
Hello. How are you, Heather and Joe?
Very well.
Very well, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having us along. This is our first kind of backstage at a real show. There's not that many. We were just saying this. There's not that many improv shows out there.
Particularly music-dedicated improv shows.
So. No, that's true. That's quite a new thing. I mean, when we first started doing Showstopper, there was almost none. There were none at all in the UK, and there weren't that many around the world, because we were looking and going, can we be inspired by other groups? And it turns out no, because they weren't around.
Yeah.
There was a musical here. It was actually... the UK has been a groundbreaking place for impro music with The Improvised Musical, which was done about 15 years ago, which was created by Alan Marriott, who was the guy who taught me, in fact. Philip Pellew, who was in Showstopper, was in that musical, as well as a whole bunch of other people were in there, like Neil Ashdown and Suki Webster a bunch. So that was about 15 years ago. That was in the Whose Line Is It Anyway era, after which... And it was very successful for a bit, and then it just died and vanished and went away. And then, of course, impro kind of died and vanished and went away, apart from basically the Comedy Store players doing two nights a week.
Yeah.
And as we know, they've done the same set for 15 years, but they always end with a little mini musical. Mm. So it's always kind of at least been some presence there.
I'm interested into how the show was born.
In 2008, I was approached by a guy who had been involved in Ken Campbell's impro antics. He had recently got interested again in improvisation. He's always been interested in improvisation, but he got a new troupe together. In fact, what he'd done is he was asked by Mark Rylance. This is, in a way, Mark Rylance is responsible for all of this. Mark Rylance was going to celebrate the anniversary of Shakespeare at the Globe. I forget which one. I should know. 16, something or other. But anyway, he was going to celebrate that, and he wanted Ken, of which he was a big fan, to do something interesting. Ken had been playing around a little bit with ideas of what you could make up in that sort of literary genre. And he got together with the idea of doing basically theatre sports, but using Shakespearean, sort of Shakespearean games. Mm-hmm. So it would be, kind of parlour games, but basically it was theatre sports, but in Elizabethan. And it was called Competitive Poltroonery. And it was done at the Globe. So, and it was such a big success. It was just, it's beautiful. There's actually video footage of it, which is, it's all handheld, but it's just delirious. The crowd are going insane for it, because you shouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
So he was asked to do the Royal Court 50th anniversary, and as part of that, he thought, well, we'll carry on this idea. But instead of doing Shakespeare, we would do kind of great literary minds of the Royal Court. So it'd be like John Osborne and people like that. And they needed a musician, oddly enough. So I was asked along because their musician had dropped out and they wanted someone to play a bit of music.
Uh-huh.
And I came along. Ken didn't even know I was an improviser. He thought I was just a musician who happened to be able to do this stuff. So I came along and basically played along and did rehearsals, and we did the Royal Court gigs. And then they were doing things like improvised John Osborne, but also you do improvised Pinter and Mamet and Beckett and all those sorts of things. Again, great, great fun literary impro games. Well, after that, when Ken then kind of obviously discovered I could do, also other things as well, not regular impro. So I became both musician, but also sometimes doing bits and bobs. We then took a show to Edinburgh in 2008, which was called In Pursuit of Cardenio. Cardenio is a genuine Shakespeare play. Mm-hmm. We know it was put on, but it's been lost.
Right.
We have a couple of songs from it, I believe, and that's it. So we developed a show where basically we would try to recreate Cardenio by improvising it. Of course, actually what happened was, after we did anything well, Ken would go, yeah, I'm bored of that, we did it, all right, moving on. And he'd change it every single night, which was, amazing in one sense, and great for the audience because they'd come back. But for us, we were going, that was really good, let me do it again, please. So by the end of that run, what actually happened was, because I was really into doing different musical styles and stuff, and Ken thought this was rather good. And because Ken didn't know much about music, wasn't his area of expertise, so he kind of let me do some stuff. So we started playing with doing music, and people kind of would develop styles. So people would, you know, and I had a guitar, because I could play guitar and keyboard and percussion and bass, but actually I always had just keyboard and guitar, and I would swap, and I would have them on my lap so I could play whatever was required, basically, those two. And then he came, I mean, it eventually got to the point where you'd have every single member of cast would have a musician that they could do a more or less an impression of for each Elizabethan humour that they were infected with. So I would have a list, you know, like 8 members of cast, 32 different musical styles, which I'd have to print, put on my keyboard. And then, well, I mean, by the end I knew it, but, you know, to begin with. Yeah. And, you know, waiting for the, what style, what humour that would infect them in the middle of scenes, and then they might go into song when it happened.
Wow.
So it became a heavily musicalised kind of show. Mm. Like, the last, especially the last 20 minutes, often he just let it turn into a kind of musical jamboree in Edinburgh. But it was still very much Ken's show. Adam, Megiddo and myself basically started discussing what other things we could do. And the idea of doing a musical, we thought, was something that we could try, because we experimented with it. So we basically started coming up with the idea of doing it. The following year, when Edinburgh time came, the venues we had pulled out. There was a venue we were going to go up to with Ken again, which we really wanted to do, but they basically, I say they pulled out, they turned around and offered us a terrible deal, so we turned them down, said we can't afford to do this, sorry. So we had a no Edinburgh that year. So Adam and I hired the Actors' Centre for a week, and we sent out a notice saying, anyone interested, we're going to see if we can basically train you for a week, and at the end we'll do a show. We got, like, you know, 15 people or something to come along. I forget how many. Random people. Some of them actually I knew, but not many, like 2 of them. And the rest were just random actors who just read about it on the Actors' Centre kind of, you know, website, came along. And Ken was there helping us a bit, but it was me and Adam ran it, and then Ken would come in for a couple of sessions and talk about how do you improvise great staging and these amazing things that Ken is good at, which the Showstoppers owe almost all of what we do, more or less, to his way of doing things. Mm. And we did it for a whole week, and we really learnt the beginnings of it, of how you might even start to do this stuff. Mm. I mean, we knew kind of how to structure songs, more or less, but we didn't really know how you make that work as a story. We didn't really know how you set things up in a way that makes sense that way.
Yeah.
And so that 1 week was kind of the crucible in which we sort of...
And that was got just 2009.
Yeah, that was 2009, exactly.
Wow. And this year, 2011, Edinburgh, there were 4 improvised musicals in C venues alone.
Yes.
So, like, I think people have seen Showstopper rise up and be like, oh, you can do it. It is possible to do it.
So, for anyone that hasn't seen the show, that's listening to this podcast, in fact, why don't you describe what the setup is? There's a writer who needs to write the musical that night, and that becomes the device for how the audience puts their input in.
Yeah, the problem we had, because everything's always... The reason why we do anything is because there's a problem that arises and we try to find a solution for it. And we have... Because with Showstopper, we had no point of reference. So those ones are always... It's just literally what we happen to think of that seems to work, which is why they change quite a lot. But one thing that hasn't changed yet is the writer, though we have occasionally done them, obviously, ourselves without a writer, because it's kind of fun. But it originally came... So, well, in Showstopper, the show now, what happens is audience comes in and sees a writer, and the writer's in trouble because he's promised his producer that he's written a musical, and he hasn't. He's lied. So he's out of ideas. When the producer says to him, you know, what have you got? He doesn't know. So he, in desperation, goes to the audience and says, you've got to help me.
Could you help me? You could be my test audience. You could come up with, like, the perfect idea for a West End show. That'd be brilliant. Yes. Okay. All right. Look, just of all the shows you've never seen, what would be an amazing setting for a show? You go, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Go, give me some ideas. Just chat them out. Yeah, oh, it's a gentleman. Oh, little boy over there who's actually raising his hands. I love you. Wow, I've not had that before. Yeah?
Utopia.
Utopia! I wish there were more of you in the world.
So once your device is set up with the writer and we've got to make a musical quickly, do you have any other structure that runs through the show, or after that point is it just down to you as the writer to... Because it's edited, the show is edited, you come back in and say, whoa, hang on a minute, we need to see this. Is there any structure to that, or do you just...
Do you have a sort of, obviously without giving away your secrets, a kind of arc that you follow?
We don't have any secrets. There's 2 ways of approaching it, basically. One is you start by going, hey, we've got to keep it all, you know, impro and free and open and undisciplined, which is what often that means. And as a result, it just turns into chaos. Mm. And then we'll see if we maybe get something out of it. Well, that's one way of doing it. And it's not the way we've chosen. Instead, what we do is we go, here's an idea. How can we make something that looks like this? then you find a way of making it look exactly like that. Mm-hmm. Totally, completely structured. And we rehearse and we go, look, let's just make it look like that.
Yeah.
And whether it's a song structure or whether it's a type of scene or whether it's a story arc. And we absolutely rigorously go, let's kind of force it to be this. Mm-hmm. Until people are totally comfortable with that structure. So if you want to do, you know, like exactly as you would if you're doing genres. Mm-hmm. You know, people so often take genre calls in like short form impro, and they've never even seen a film in film noir. They've only ever seen Mike McShane be funny doing it. It's like, watch it. Think about it and go, what are the beats that make it up? Mm-hmm. And then do it and then practice it. Now, once you've done that and you've totally nailed how to create that structure, and everyone goes, yeah, I mean, they all feel its constraints, but they will go, yeah, but I totally understand what a quest story is like. Yeah. I totally understand what a love triangle story would, you know, would do, etc. So what you then do is, you then, after you've done that, you then can say, right, and now I'm going to give you an ask for at the start that doesn't fall into these categories. And then the people go, oh, well, in that case, now we don't have to do any of these things. Mm. If it starts looking questy, chuck in a bit of quest sort of stuff. And if it starts looking a bit, you know, like you've got a three-way love triangle, you put those bits in. And everything then just, you get these different structures. Mm. Another example is in the song structure. So a good example is Gilbert and Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Gilbert and Sullivan is a tricky one to improvise because there's only really one. Well, we only discovered, kind of with Duncan, who is in fact here.
Hello, Duncan.
Duncan's job is to take every single musical and musical composer and go, what are the elements of that composer that sound like them and no one else? But without doing any of their songs, because obviously that's not fun and that's not the point of it either. Mm. So for Gilbert and Sullivan, we went through a process, which kind of is pretty much what we've done for all the others, but this is a harsher example. You basically come up with one structure that sounds exactly like Gilbert and Sullivan, and it's more or less a copy of a mélange of 2, 3, 4 of their most iconic songs.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I have information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England like to quote the fight historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorically.
Three little bits in school are we. What does the schoolgirl well can be? Filled to the brim with girlish glee. Three little bits in school.
Glory himself has said it, and it's greatly to his credit that he is an Englishman.
You turn it into something, you're going, it's these sorts of chord sequences, how does the melody flow, what sorts of words, what kind of lyrical games do they play? You just practice like crazy until you're going a song and everyone goes, oh, that's and then they realise they're actually thinking of three different songs.
Yeah.
Making utopia is something of an art, but the most important thing is to keep men and women apart. All you have to do if you want to follow rules is learn what you did at school.
Learn what you did at school.
You know the type.
So you can do that for a bit. Mm-hmm. And people will go, yeah, that's kind of like a bit like, and they'll name these 3 or 4, 5, 6 songs.
As Dylan says, we start with this sort of one specific template. And then start to move away from it, mm-hmm. to the point where you're just improvising in that composer's world.
And all the drills that you've done feed into it at that point. We always say when we teach musical improv, the structure's only there to help you.
Yes.
If the structure feels like it's dissolving away, go where you feel you should
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
As long as you've practiced that structure.
It's important to start with the structure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, as Dylan says, it's just chaos. What you want to create is the song they never wrote,
yeah.
but they might have done.
The key thing for all of this is you've got to do it so much that it's in your bones. It's exactly the same with improv. Like, your narrative bones, you know, you can't... as we all know, in a scene, basically everything is a microcosm of everything else. In a particular scene, you will have an instinct for where the scene might be able to go. And it will be an instinct for what would make this more interesting, and you follow emotional beats and so on. Similarly, though, you might have an instinct as to where the 3 or 4 scenes might go. The story, if you like, is going mm-hmm. to go. And that might be counter to where the scene should go. So the scene might be much more interesting if you break down. The story, however, will be ruined because you set it up so that breakdown should happen in the end. That's the point of it, right?
Okay.
So, and then similarly, you've got basically these different instincts, and the only way for it to work, you cannot think it through. In the same way, in a scene, if you actually go, ooh, I've had a thought, this will be interesting, you're already out at the moment, you've lost it, you've got no emotional connection with the other person, and you're screwed as an improviser.
Mm.
And same with story. It turns out it just takes a lot longer to actually get story in your bones than it does to get scene work in your bones.
Yeah.
Because... just takes longer to practice. You can do 10 scenes in an hour, or 10 scenes in six, you know, in less than an hour, whereas to do 10 stories, you know, you could do 10 hours, but no one works that hard, if you like.
So. And it's the same in music as a musician, Duncan. It's like, is there going to be another chorus? Is someone going to sing another verse now? Like, working with the same people and drilling those songs again and again,
you
shouldn't have to think about it consciously.
Exactly, yes. And there should be no rule. No. Like, you always do two choruses, or you always do three verses. Mm. You do what works in the moment.
Yeah.
And when you've worked with a team long enough, you know what your teammate is going to do and what you need to do to support him, the same way that a footballer does.
Yeah.
You don't need to think about it. Yeah, no. The slightest twitch, the slightest body movement or gesture, you know exactly what they're doing and you know what you have to do to complement it.
Yeah.
So I have a question, which is, you know, if, and I totally think if you're going to be a good improviser, unfortunately, one of the things you have to do is you have to be a bit of a student of life. So you have to suck up every possible type, genre, style, way of being in theatre and music and everything. And so if you have the luxury of rehearsals and you can go into quite a lot of depth in those kind of musical styles, obviously you're going to get very accomplished at it. My question would be, if you're a less experienced musical improviser, or say, I'm sure this wouldn't happen, someone said, please improvise us a song in the style of a very little known Japanese folk region, and it was something you genuinely didn't know, what is your tip for blagging it?
Yeah, lots of ways of doing it. I mean, basically, you fess up. You say to the audience, yeah, great. And the key thing is to get the decade. That's Duncan's suggestion. That's great. Really helps.
And the country.
Yeah, decade, country, and maybe their main instrument.
And even then, what you come up with may be wildly wrong. But the point is, that'll give you something in your head to anchor it.
Yeah.
The key, I mean, the shortest answer to your question is, do something with total confidence.
Yeah.
Basically, if something obscure, if you've been thrown something obscure, it's probably because the audience is trying to fuck you up.
Mm. Yeah.
And the answer is not to be fucked up.
Mm.
Do something with total confidence that makes total sense to you.
Have you had Tim mentioned yet?
We've had Tim mentioned in a gig a couple of weeks ago.
Have we had Book of Mormon yet, actually?
Not
with me
yet, but we're bound to have it soon.
And one thing we really wanted to have, and I don't think it ever happened, was London Road, which is...
London Road, we did a workshop on London Road.
I know.
So you're ready.
We're so ready. No one ever...
Listeners, if you come to Showstopper
London Road. London Road, yeah, exactly. And then Sister Act, which we haven't had for ages.
Great fun. So moving slightly away from Showstoppers and more into the general realm of musical improv, one thing we always sort of say to people, because you meet some improvisers have no interest in doing musical improv at all, and it goes a little bit back to what you're saying about the whole commitment level, because we're always saying to people, if you have no interest in doing musical improv at all, do one class in your life as an improviser, because I think there's something about stepping up and having to improvise a song that puts you in the shit like almost nothing else, I'd say.
It's one of the most, it's the key tool. When I'm teaching improv, I always make people do music improv. It's one of the best things you can do. And the reason is this, most people find, as we all know, you start to do improv and then you get very good at actually never leaving your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there are areas of where you don't know what's happening, but you like being in that area of not what's happening, you find ways of avoiding never having to go to the areas where you don't know what's happening that you don't like. You know, you get very good at really fitting yourself in around that, and it's not good for you as an improviser. What musical improv does in a way that you can't get in a regular scene is it has a pulse, which is a beast that will not be fed. You cannot ignore the fact that music is demanding that you must sing something now.
Yeah.
And if you don't fill it with something that's emotionally relevant, then it doesn't make any sense at all. And if you stop singing, then you stop singing a song. The song is over. In a normal scene, you can step, you know, go to the back, or you can be silent, or you can think for a bit, you know, and you simply don't get that option in musical improv. So what musical improv does is it forces you to take that step, to commit immediately, absolutely in the moment, or be exposed to have failed, which you don't often get in regular improv. You can always hide it. It makes you a better improviser. Everyone should do it because it makes you a better improviser. If you don't do it, you're missing out on training that will make you a better improviser. So do
it. And also, it is not in any way dependent on how you think your singing voice is.
Absolutely not.
It's totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
You can do an amazing improvised song without being a singer.
Of course, without singing a note, in fact. Yeah.
Or singing one note.
Or singing one note.
What you do need, I think, there's one thing where I have struggled, and maybe there is someone out there who's managed to get over this. What you do need is a sense of pulse. You need to be able to hear the beat, so you need a sense of rhythm.
Because it doesn't break down into something that you can explain in words. You can't, I mean, you can sort of say, music has four beats in this bar and it has this many bars in this place and so on.
Explaining it makes...
If you don't feel it...
It's in your bones. So what you need to do is, basically, I would say, you need to get to do drum circles. Get them to do a drum circle. Mm-hmm. Sit there and get everyone in a row and bam, 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 and then get them to follow you and just do that. And they'll be shocking it to begin with, and then they'll eventually get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a physical thing. Like, humanity has always done percussion. The only reason people can't do it, unless they actually have a genuine, like, you know, neurological disorder, which is very rare, just because they've not been exposed to it and they just need to do it more.
And they need to do it more, I think, with a team of people that they trust.
Right.
Because what will happen is that, like in all impro, it's everybody else's job to make what you're doing work. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're singing a song or even just doing a rap and your timing is slightly off. Everybody else needs to just subtly shift to keep you on track so you don't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
So actually what happens is your rhythm might be quite poor, but you start to think it's fine.
Yeah.
And then what happens is because you get more confident, it becomes fine.
Mm.
And this is what happened in Showstopper.
Mm.
Some people needed a certain amount of support from the rest of the cast and from me, and I would have to occasionally drop beats and speed up and slow down
to keep them
on track. And now I don't have to do that because they've got so confident.
Yeah.
They actually now just get it right.
And they trust you as well that you will pick it up if that happens,
exactly.
Even though you don't need to.
And they stop worrying. And stopping worrying about it is most of the battle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duncan, this is a question for you. How much control do you think you have narratively? Because we were talking about this earlier as well, about how we worked with another musician recently. It was fantastic underscoring for a lot of the show. But it did make us realise that as a result of that, a lot of the scenes had a very different flavour than they would have done if they'd let be. Do you make musical choices on the basis of what's come from whoever's directing that night, or do you ever make choices that end up influencing what happens to the characters' emotions and what happens to the rest of the plot?
I think mostly I help shepherd the plot and help control the pace rather than actually making decisions. So what I try and do is pick up on the emotional beats of the scene and try and figure out what the scene is about and what's the overriding emotion. And that leads me to play something, anything. And what once it's clear to me where a scene is going, I try and just help it along in that direction. So I do try and build a momentum. So rather than just being background music, obviously most scenes in an improvised musical, you want to get into a song at some point. So mostly I'm trying to shepherd people towards a song. And sometimes almost shepherding them away from it if I think they're rushing towards a song too quickly, or if we've got into a song too quickly, in my opinion, I'll try and sort of try and pull back and encourage them to go back to dialogue.
Mm.
So I like to think I help shepherd a plot and help drive the pace a bit, but I don't think I make decisions in
that way. It's interesting though,
no.
Isn't it? Because the musician so easily can. I mean, if there's a love scene going on and the musician goes, dun, dun, dun.
That I would never do.
You know, it suddenly changes everything. So it's quite a powerful role.
Yeah. Yes.
If you abuse your power in that way.
Yeah, that I would never do. I think in the very, very early shows I would do that, perhaps, but I think I was... but I think just to try and get laughs, and that was something I stopped doing very, very quickly.
You're right, and you say that your job is to find the emotion in the scene, the prominent one, or the one that needs to come out in that scene.
I think so. So if somebody maybe hasn't realised themselves, if somebody has come out with something that to me suggests an emotion, if they haven't necessarily realised that's really where the scene should go, hopefully my playing something will help focus on that.
Especially with something like sadness, a lot of characters, there's the dialogue that you don't hear is the fact that inside they're dying, or inside they're desperately in love with the person that they're with.
Yeah.
And the musician can really help just to be like,
exactly.
Let's bring that out now.
Exactly. And with a long form show, obviously you want to have an eye on the overall course of the story. So if I think if I really think the show needs to start getting happier, because I think that's where the show needs to go overall, then I might pick up on a happy bit in a scene and try and accentuate
the
that musically.
Said,
So, but I don't think I'd ever try and impose something that's not there.
Mm.
So not like the dun 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 bum bum. It's very easy.
Dun 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 dun. Oi!
Exactly. I don't think I would ever try and impose anything like that. Yeah.
I think you're really sweet and oh so kind. I think you're really neat. There's a drink just behind. I think you're ever so delightful in your mind. Oh, you could be the one for me.
I'm sure you've spawned a whole generation of inspired a whole generation of followers, and I'm sure, as I said,
I prefer inspired to spawn.
Inspired.
Yeah, spawn was the wrong
word. Spawn.
I wouldn't want any other group to be seen as an imitator of us. If other people are doing other work in the same field but making their own mark,
what I mean is great. You've raised the bar and you've set the standard and you've raised the public profile of musical improv, which is why Showstopper is so important. You are the only people doing this in this country at the moment, and I think that that's the start of something that's going to be much bigger.
Well, hopefully what will hopefully happen is, in the same way, actually, the School of Night, which is another group I'm with, is hopefully doing this for straight theatre, is if we can convince producers and theatre folk and people who've gone to acting school and hated improv that actually improv can be good and actually can be as high quality enough to attract the biggest audiences.
Yeah.
Then everyone's been, you know, everyone's profited from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hope that happens.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you guys have to go off for your sound check fairly soon. So thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you very much. We're looking forward to watching the show.
We're very much looking forward to watching the show, and hopefully a couple of the clips from the show we can use to elucidate the points that we've been talking about a little bit.
Yes. Well, we better go in and write it now. So.
I suppose you had, yeah.